coming up on This Week in Radio Tech. Well, I'm here, of course, but you know who else is here? Rob Ashard and Nick Jackson. They're on a boat. They're on Radio Caroline. They're on the Ross Revenge boat off the coast of England, coming to us live on This Week in Radio Tech for a look at Radio Caroline. This Week in Radio Tech is brought to you by Broadcasters General Store, with outstanding service, saving, and support, online at bgs.cc. By the new Ruby console from Lavo. See Lavo in your future at lavo.com/twart. And by the Telos Alliance, shaping the future of audio, inspiring you to create the most exciting and engaging audio experiences imaginable. Visit telosalliance.com/opt-in. Hey, friends, welcome into This Week in Radio Tech. I'm Kirk Harnack, your host. Glad that you're here. I'm in a different spot. I'm actually at my dad's house in Georgia, and dad very politely got out of the way and said, here, use my desk. So here I am at dad's house in Georgia, and we're doing This Week in Radio Tech. This episode, our guest, Rob Ashard, and also his friend, Nick Jackson, are coming to us live from the Ross Revenge. That's a boat just off the English coast. And we'll check in with him in just a second. Chris Tobin checked in with us a little while ago and said he can't be here. So, Chris Tobin, wish you well. He's running security for the SBE meeting at the One World Trade Center building in New York City. So good luck, Chris, and y'all have a great SBE meeting. Let's go ahead and bring in our guest, though, Rob Ashard. Welcome into This Week in Radio Tech.
Hi, Kirk. I'm not sure how much you heard when you first threw it to us. So basically, we're out on the Ross Revenge. Radio Caroline's a ship that was out at sea from 83 to 90. It's a 1,000-foot long, 1,000-ton Icelandic trawler, 300 foot long, and has a hull full of concrete. And it's blowing up, it's moving about because we've got 50 mile an hour winds here this evening.
Oh, my goodness. So why is the hull full of concrete? Oh, the mast.
So basically, when they built it as a radio ship, one of the things they did is fill the hull, though they carefully baffled around areas so you could get to tanks, bilge tanks and all sorts of fuel tanks and stuff down in the hull. But basically, it was to ballast the mast. So we had the tallest ship-built structure in the world, about 270 feet high. It was quite a sight, I have to say. I remember the first time I saw it in the flesh, just absolutely amazing. I'm sure people have seen pictures. I think Suncast have got some pictures of the ship. It hung on there till 87, I think, when we had a hurricane followed, which was untypical for the UK, followed by another hurricane, and it had got weakened in the first one and ended up going over the side in the second, unfortunately.
Now, the ship you're on now, is this the first Radio Caroline ship, or was there one preceding this one?
There were two preceding this. Basically, Caroline started in 64 by Ronan O'Reilly, who was a sort of a music manager, basically. And back then, you only had the BBC, you had Radio Luxembourg, and he was managing his bands and wanting to get his music played on the radio. Basically, no one would play it. You couldn't get in the door. It was all closed doors, basically. So already offshore radio had happened in Sweden and in Holland, and he thought, well, the only way I can get my bands on the radio is to start one of those offshore radio stations. So they're not illegal. They were working outside the law. So the ships had to be outside the 3-mile limit.
Wow. So what was the first frequency and power, do you know?
It was in meters in those days. So it was at the high frequency end, 199. Mm-hmm. Caroline on 199, but they were sometimes a little creative. It was 199 meters, so they were quite often a little bit creative and used the number that rhymed with Caroline.
How did the name Radio Caroline come about?
Well, that's the rumor has it that Ronan O'Reilly was on a flight to America, and I think he was reading a Time Out magazine and saw President Kennedy playing with his daughter Caroline, and thought it was quite funny that the whole world was happening and all this highest powered band in the world, and Caroline was there sort of disrupting his attention, if you like. That's the rumor.
Wow. Okay. So, curious. Okay, let's talk about the Ross Revenge then, the ship you're on now. Mm-hmm. For a while, this thing was what, 50 kilowatts?
Yeah, it has. It's got a 50 kilowatt RCA amplifier transmitter downstairs. It was run usually at around 27 kilowatts. Bear in mind that a salt water is a pretty good earth plane. So it was a stonking signal. And of course, actually, it was probably the first Optimod that had been heard in Europe, arguably first or second. So we'd never heard a signal like it. And of course, we have a narrower audio bandwidth here, 9 kilohertz instead of 10, but it was probably pushing the 10, so it sounded amazing. It nearly sounded like FM to our ears at the time.
So this was put on the air to play bands. Yeah, go ahead,
No, I was just going to backtrack a little bit with the ships that arrived in 64. Caroline turned up, and another station called Radio Atlanta turned up within weeks. And they decided it was silly to have these two stations, so they pooled resources, and one went up to the Isle of Man and became Caroline North, which was the original Caroline ship, and the Atlanta ship became Caroline South, which was moored in the Thames Estuary and hit the dense southeast of England, dense population, in London, basically, got down the Thames Estuary into London.
Wow.
So the Caroline North ship, they sort of ran out of money in 69, and that the North ship was broken up. The South ship came out to sea again in 72, but this time Caroline's always tried to be an alternative to what's around. So in the 60s, it was pop station because we didn't have pop. We literally virtually didn't have pop stations. You had a few hours a week on the BBC or Radio Luxembourg in the evening. And then so that ship became an album station in the 70s. And that's when I a lot of people go, oh, Caroline 60s, but I'm a bit later. I was born in 1960, so I was in my teens in the mid-70s, and Caroline was an album station, and that's what I loved about Radio Caroline. And that ship sunk in 1980, and then this ship replaced it in 83.
So what, when Radio Caroline first went on the air, you said it played pop, because that wasn't being played much on the BBC or Radio Luxembourg. So what were some groups that might have been played when Radio Caroline first came on the air?
Well, it was the whole 60s explosion, really. So, Crumbs, Nick, help me out here.
Rolling Stones
and the Beatles. Fade Away. Not Fade Away, first record, wasn't it? Yeah. So
certainly the Beatles. And yeah, there was that whole Carnaby Street era, and it was just in the right place at the right time, wasn't it?
Right, the swinging 60s we had here and the pirate stations, because actually this then grew. They ended up to be a whole load of pirate stations around the coast. And some stations on old wartime forts that were anti-aircraft gun emplacements. And so basically, I can't remember how many ships there were, like 8 or 9.
They were dotted
all around the coast.
Even off the coast of Scotland, there was Radio Scotland again on a ship.
Yeah.
But this was the first. Caroline was first, there was always going to be imitations, and many stations came along through the 60s and indeed the 70s as well.
Yeah, so Caroline was in the thick of it, and
Let me ask our producer, Suncast, to stay on that shot, the two shot. I'm not so important. You guys are. And so we have Rob Ashard on the right side of your screen and Nick Jackson or Jack Nixon on the left side of your screen.
We agreed we wouldn't talk about that.
Oh, we did. Oh, I'm so sorry. So, when did you get started with Radio Caroline, and what have you been doing?
I got started at the end of 1988, Christmas 88, New Year 89, and Radio Caroline was, as it was for many people that were lucky enough to carve out a career in radio, it was my first station. It was the one that started the ball rolling for me. I knew I wanted to work in radio from quite a young age, but how to do it? I was kind of familiar when I was young with the pictures on TV of the original Caroline ship, or the second ship, actually, the Mi Amigo, which was the Caroline ship, which I guess is the most famous one because that was the one that sank out in the North Sea in 1980. So lots of people always remember the Mi Amigo. So I do vividly remember those pictures on TV of the Mi Amigo sinking. And it was some years later, somebody had mentioned to me about Radio Caroline being back on air from a brand new ship, and I started listening. And that all tied in with me thinking, I want to be on the radio, and I'd love to do Caroline. It turned out it was all about who you knew at the time. It was all about knowing the right contacts, as it is in so many industries. And it was my brother that was actually working with somebody that had worked on this ship out at sea. So after months of me trying to contact the right people to get out here and be a presenter, all it took was my brother meeting the right person who said, oh, tell him to call this phone number. And within a few days, it happened and I was out at sea. So this was my first radio station, and I was lucky to work in commercial radio for years after that. But it's just so amazing, and we say this every time we're on the ship, that all these years later, we're still here, a little bit older and grayer, and this ship's still here, Radio Caroline's still here, and it's just great to come back and still be part of this ongoing soap opera, if you like.
And of course, Nick, you have a special atmosphere, don't you? Because most radio stations, people come in, do their air shift, go home. But everyone's living on the same ship, and you've got the transmitter and the generators and the studios and the whole thing.
You live the job. You don't go home. And so when you were out at sea 17 miles off the coast, the atmosphere would change depending on which crew was on board. You had to get on. You know, you're living on top of each other all the time. So you had to get on. Obviously, some people didn't. Some people would come along and think, yeah, maybe this is not for me. So they'd just do a few weeks and you wouldn't see them again. But then you would have periods where people would stay with the station for years and years and years and keep coming back. You'd go on shore leave for a few weeks, maybe a few months, and then come back and do it all over again. And that happened throughout its time at sea. So, yeah, it's a unique station. As Rob says, you don't go home at the end of the day. You're living with your fellow presenters. And, we joke about it a lot. It's an ongoing soap opera. And people would leave a long time and come back. And
tell you what, let's take a quick message from our sponsor, the TELUS Alliance. When we come back with Nick Jackson and Rob Ashard, I'm curious to hear, we'll get to the technical stuff too, but I want to understand what it's like how do you get out to the ship? How do you get back? What do you bring with you? Do you bring food? Do you bring blankets and pillows, sleeping? What's life like getting out to the ship and getting back? So we'll talk about that in just a few minutes. Our show, This Week in Radio Tech. I'm Kirk Harnack along with Rob Ashard, Nick Jackson. They are live on the Ross Revenge ship. It is anchored just off the English coast, and it's the home of Radio Caroline, the classic, the historic home of that. Our show, This Week in Radio Tech, brought to you in part by my friends at the TELUS Alliance. And, we've talked about the TELUS VX, the first voice over IP phone system for broadcasters. It's in use at hundreds of radio and television stations now, and big network operations, small mom and pop stations. And there's a brand new version of the TELUS VX system that is just now coming out. It's called the TELUS VX Enterprise, and it is capable of close to double the amount of phone lines and, more importantly, phone hybrids than the original VX. There's also another version called the TELUS VX Prime Plus, and that is more budget-minded. If you've just got a couple of studios, maybe one or two or maybe three studios to put callers in, instead of replacing phone systems one studio at a time, you can now get an affordable TELUS VX Prime Plus and put that in your studios. It'll handle the phone calls for all of your studios and maybe even a couple of news workstations or something like that, production rooms. Even if you have a small facility, mom and pop size station, you got one or two radio stations in there. Or if you have a big operation, you can go with the TELUS VX Enterprise. Either way, you're going to get you're going to be kind of forced into moving up the ladder in your phone line quality. You're going to move either to a PRI service, or you're going to move preferably to a SIP-based voice over IP service from your phone provider, whether it's your traditional phone provider or maybe a new one that you're going to start dealing with. Many of these, you can have your lines ported over. Some stations have found out that, hey, we're just going to get new phone lines and advertise those numbers on the air. And you know what? It works out well. The TELUS VX is a system where you probably ought to talk to one of our sales reps or one of our support guys to talk about exactly how to size it, whether you might want to get an asterisk phone system to go with it, or whether you want to connect it into your existing voice over IP phone system. Either way, the TELUS Alliance has great advice on how to get that done. And you know what? I did a video about saving money with voiceover IP and SIP phone service. And I researched this very well. I talked to actual users of Telos VX and found out how much are you actually saving over what you were doing before. And the answers came back fairly consistent. We saved anywhere from 50% to 90% on our phone line costs. And, you know, phone line costs of traditional phone lines are just out the, I mean, they're skyrocketing huge. It's not hard to pay $90 to $100 per phone line for POTS phone lines for business phones. And believe me, you want to get rid of those. You want to go to either a PRI type of service or even better, a voice over IP. And if you're worried about that service, you know, being there all the time, you don't want to rely on public internet, you can get a managed voice over IP service and still save about 50% off what you're paying now. Point of all that is a system like the Telos VX Enterprise or the VX Prime Plus, those can pay for themselves in anywhere from 18 months to 3 years. And after that, it's just gravy. All the money you're saving on your phone lines is money in your pocket. Your phones will sound better than ever. One more benefit, if you want to have higher quality voice calls, use the G.722 algorithm. Now, I know as a broadcast engineer, we don't think of G.722 as being high quality, but compared to a regular phone call, oh my goodness, it sounds way better. You can do sports broadcasts, parade broadcasts, ball games, interviews with VIPs. You can do all of that with the a soft phone and the G722 algorithm, and even, you know, have your own employees carry, you know, add a soft phone app on their phone. They can call into the station and bam, they are doing it at high quality. So I got to encourage you. You want to quit spending money on phone lines. Quit giving your money to Ma Bell and give your money to us. Check out the Telos VX Enterprise for big operations and the Telos VX Prime Plus. Do it today. Go to telosalliance.com and read all about the Telos VX. I'm a big believer. This is an amazing phone system, and these are in literally hundreds and hundreds of radio and TV stations now. All right. Thanks a lot to Telos for sponsoring This Week in Radio Tech. All right. Let's see if Rob and Nick are still with us from the Ross Revenge.
There we are. Still there.
So give me a little bit of a look at.
We have had some technicals, haven't we?
Just a few.
Yeah. Well, it's, you know, on the YouTube version of the show, people will wonder, what are they talking about? It looked fine, the whole thing. So we'll cut that out.
Yeah, no problem here. No problem at all.
So tell us about daily life to and from work and spending the night at work. What was that like?
To and from the ship was quite interesting. When it was at sea, certainly the time I was at sea, we were 17 miles off the coast of Kent. And there were two ways you could get to the ship. You could either go from the French coast and take a slightly longer journey out, but on a bigger ship, so you were traveling in comfort. Every trip I did, though, was from the English coast, although we didn't admit to that at the time. And we were on a small fishing boat. And you were either unlucky or unlucky. If you were unlucky, then our fisherman that used to bring us out would drop his fishing nets on the way out. So you had a slightly longer trip out to the ship because he'd go off and shoot his fishing nets. The worst one, though, is coming home when you'd been sitting on the ship for weeks, you'd been out here for weeks, maybe months on end, and you'd made your decision, you wanted to go home. You know, we had something called tenderitis. Tenderitis would set in. That's when you were scanning the horizon, looking for the boat because you'd had enough and it was time to go. So in those periods, you just wanted to go home and just get there as quickly as possible. And the worst thing that could happen was your fisherman would haul his nets on the way home and do a very, very long fishing trip between the ship and the coast. Oh, and that used to take hours. So he'd be fishing, he'd be gutting the fish, he would be preparing everything. And that's the last thing you wanted. You just wanted to go.
Smell of diesel and fish,
and
not good.
Smell of diesel as well. So that was pretty unpleasant. So these days, where we are now, it's luxury now. It's nice that we're sitting out in the Blackwater Estuary. It's about a 20-minute boat ride. There's no fishing trips involved, at least there haven't been yet, and there won't be anytime soon, will there, Nick, if you're watching? So it's a lot easier now. But what we have to remember now, because over the last few years, the ship's moved around a bit. And sometimes it has been in port, it has been alongside land. So you've got the advantage of being able to drive your car right up alongside the ship and step on board. That's great. If you forget something when you're on board for the weekend or whatever, you could just pop down to the local supermarket and do your shopping. Now we have to think like we used to back in our days at sea, because we're out in the estuary, so we have to remember to bring everything. Otherwise, we're stuck. There's no nipping down to the supermarket. So you really have to think like we used to at sea and plan ahead when it comes to your shopping. But yeah, it's a commute unlike any other.
So what, Rob, maybe you can fill me in on this. What has been the situation such that sometimes it's during some periods of the ship, it was 17 miles offshore. Sometimes it was docked right there. You could drive up to it, as Nick just said. And sometimes it's like it is now. You're out in the water, not very far out, but you still have to take some kind of boat or a dinghy or something out to the Ross Revenge, right?
Yeah. So basically the station sort of ground to a halt in 1990s, it basically ran out of money, but it then ended up on the Goodwin Sands, which is a big sandbank off the coast of Kent. And this ship is one of the few ships that's ever got off the Goodwin Sands without breaking its back. So it ended up to Dover Port, and then the fans and supporters ended up helping it, and So basically now it's never gone back out to sea, but on the understanding that it didn't broadcast, basically, from, using its big transmitters. So from that point onwards, it's been really a land operation. But, we were just doing a quick count up today. We think we counted 11 or 12 people that have served out at sea in the 70s or 80s that are still involved today. It's a non-profit making radio station now. We just do it for love and because we believe in the sort of music. We don't have the huge choice of radio stations you have in America, it's fair to say. We are a sort of an alternative. And we were saying there's a very famous saying within the Caroline community that they says you can check out, but you can never leave. You may recognize it.
Now,
come back.
While we were still trying to get connected, I showed people the app here, if they want to switch back to me, the app called Radio Caroline. You can find it for iOS or Android. And tell me about the app. And you even got, like for the U.S., where I am, you've got an East Coast feed and a West Coast feed. I guess these are day parted, right?
Basically it's they're sort of recorded and time delayed with a couple of computers at our time shifted feeds, basically. So they've just simply delayed 5 and 8 hours from our sort of live shows. So basically we have a studio base on land that is what's the normal Caroline operation day to day. There are some live programs go out from that. There are some pre-recorded programs that go out from there, and also we have presenters that have streaming from their home studios as well. So it's 24/7 operation. We have an old feature that's one of the most popular. Every weekday from 9 till 10, we have the top listener top 15, and the listeners submit their own top 15 tracks. Caroline's is moving forward. We have those streams. We have DAB outlets all over the country. And now, since December last year, we have our 648 AM transmitter. And that's proving quite popular. So it's a pretty good signal in the target area of North Essex and Suffolk. Tricky times these days for AM, isn't it, with interference? But we really have a very good signal in that area, and it's proving quite popular. So, with Caroline making AM great again, I think you could say.
Well, and of course, the streaming, that's, that's easy for me to listen to. I can't pick up the AM so well, so the streaming is pretty awesome. So let's, if we could, we don't know how much time we got left. We're doing okay now on the signal, but we'll see. Talk to us about the technicalities, what either or both of you might know or carry us through. Like, when was a 50 kilowatt installed? And that for a time, you had two AM stations diplexed into the antenna, transmitting from there. Give us a little bit of a carry through on how all that started and looked.
So this ship was put together in Santander in Spain. And basically, as I understand it, they bought lock, stock and barrel a Canadian country and western station. So all the gear, pretty much, as I understand it, came from that. So it came. So okay. We had the 50K. I don't know if the, so downstairs also there was a 10K and a 5K.
Yeah.
The 10K got converted to shortwave later, and we put some religious programming out, which we got some money for. But we had Gates desks, the Gates mixers as well. There was a Duolux next door in Studio One that's sadly off the ship for repair at the moment, but it has literally been running all this time since 83, and it was obviously well secondhand at that point. So interestingly, we've always had a lot of American radio equipment, whereas British commercial radio stations have sort of British-made desks like the one we've got here, which is an Alice Air 2000, which was a sort of a state-of-the-art analog mixer, similar in status, I guess, to BCX desks over there.
Hmm. Okay. Okay. Now the you mentioned earlier you had this Ampliphase transmitter from, it must have been an RCA Ampliphase, 50 kilowatt. And yep. I've seen a few of these. These, as I recall, these are not very efficient at all. They used a lot of electricity, but when they worked properly, they sounded great. Is that your recollection of that, how that transmitter worked?
Well, it certainly sounded good, but I've heard that, yeah, the adjustment is quite pernickety with its adjustments. But it certainly, you know, at home it sounded fantastic. Absolutely. And as I said, with the ground plane of the salt water, it was just a huge signal over a massive area of Europe.
Yeah.
Absolutely huge.
And I'm sorry, if the two stations that were diplexed together, again, what two frequencies or what two meter bands?
So it was 963 was the 50K okay. Ampliphase, and 558 was a kind of, I think it was running about 7 kilowatts,
wasn't it? About 7, yeah. That one moved around a bit. Initially it was on 576, then it moved to 558. But yeah, those were the two. But they were all RCA, and I think it was the first time we'd used RCA. The previous ship had a
Continental Electronics 50
yeah.
kilowatt.
Yeah. Yeah, so it was a bit of a change this ship was fitted out to go RCA. I think the plan was to try and source Continental Electronics for this, but there was no equipment available at that time, which is why we went down the RCA route.
Gotcha. Sort of what was available at the time, basically. Yeah.
I guess if it's a Continental high power AM, the amplifier may have been of the Doherty design, where there's a carrier tube and a peak tube, and that's a bit more efficient than the Ampliphase model. I got to ask this. If you're a pirate station, how do you choose a frequency? Any idea?
you tune around the dial, find a quiet bit, and go, yeah, we'll go there.
Okay, pretty and bad. Hope nobody complains, yeah, or not too badly. So I'm doing some research on this. I saw a picture on the internet that says it is illegal to listen to Radio Caroline on 199 meters. Who would have printed that sign? Was that the British government?
Well, actually, I think they were our own.
I think they were our own at some
but
point.
But it actually was technically illegal to listen to a pirate station.
Technically illegal. I believe there was a case where somebody was prosecuted, or there was an attempted prosecution for somebody actually displaying a bumper sticker, a car sticker, a Caroline sticker.
Oh, my goodness. Oh, my goodness.
Yeah, that's when it got right. silly.
That's right. Well,
They liked control over there, and the government didn't like not having control back in those days. That's what was the problem.
Yeah. Wow. Wow. So I was wondering about technical staff. It seems to me that in those days, when you had these high power AM transmitters, you had generators, a couple of big generators running. What full-time technical staff would be on the boat?
Peter Chicago. Yeah, there was a guy who saw Caroline through the 70s and the 80s, who was a bit of a genius with RF. We also had we did have generator engineers as well. Well, because basically we had ships engineers who would have been, diesel engineers as well. But Peter Chicago was the man who built this whole this whole ship, and he'd looked after the previous ship, the Mi Amigo, and he'd also worked on another pirate ship in the early 70s called Radio North Sea International, which was a pretty amazing station. So, yeah, we had quite a few. We had a couple of stations up till 74, then the Dutch outlawed it, and then it was Caroline left again on their own. So it literally was illegal. So when you were talking to Nick about making arrangements, you have to remember, Caroline, it wasn't in the phone book. We didn't have mobile phones. That's why Nick said you had to know the right people, because if you didn't, you couldn't get a hold of anybody.
Wow. All right. I've got more technical questions coming up in a few minutes. Let's take a quick break and hear from our friends. Broadcasters General Store is your place to get all of your broadcast equipment stuff, but especially a fantastic product for taking phone calls, recording them, and making them sound just great on the air. It's the Vox Pro, the latest one. Let's take a quick look.
Scott Feibusch here at Wheatstone at NAB, and one of the attractions of the booth is one of the masters of the Vox Pro. Cadence here. We got the Vox Pro 7.
Yeah, new Vox Pro 7.
What is new? What's exciting?
So many new features. We got a built-in, like, a mini processor. You can adjust EQs, de-essing, almost like a mini production studio. You know, you want to jack up the levels if you got of a low caller. Also, we got the Gap Buster, where instead of sitting here on the Vox Pro, if you're an advanced Vox Pro person, instead of sitting there and editing out all the silence and stuff, basically hit two buttons, and all of that is done for you. It's all about the shortcuts this year. Also, they built FX macros, which is basically a shortcut button that you establish at the top of your file. And instead of sitting there for 2.5 minutes during a song editing, you know, all the ins and outs of the phone call, you can hit two or three buttons and in real time, doing it in about 20% of the time.
So this is what we're going to see you demonstrating here.
Yeah, for sure. And, you know, last year we went into the hotkey portion, and we can get a little bit more advanced and stuff like that. But there's just so much more stuff that is coming out with the Vox Pro 7 here at NAB 2017.
I'm going to stand back and watch you do your magic.
All right.
Thanks a lot to Broadcaster General Store, where you can get Vox Pro from Wheatstone and all your other stuff that you need for your radio station. You know, my friends at Broadcaster General Store have been building their business for literally decades. The Shute family got things going. The Kirstens are involved now. And it's just a big family operation. And it's a friendly place. Key to what they do there is they've been building their internal systems for years with custom software that lets them, as a dealer, keep track of all their vendors' products, the current pricing, the current descriptions, current availability, and I've never experienced anything like it. You call, you order something, they are very good at being able to tell you when it's going to arrive, keeping track of it for you, letting you know if it's going to be late, if it's going to be early, and it's just always had such a great time dealing with Broadcaster General Store. Call, look them up on the web at bgs.cc, bgs.cc, or give them a call. Keep this number in your phone. It's just terrific. 352-622-7700. 352-622-7700, and all my friends there at Broadcasters General Store. Okay, we're live on episode 413 of This Week in Radio Tech. I'm Kirk Harnack, along with Rob Ashard and Nick Jackson, and they are on a ship.
They are on a ship.
just off the coast of England. Hey, guys, welcome back in.
Hiya. Still blowing a gale outside.
And thank you for not calling me Jack Nixon again.
Again. I almost did. Almost did myself.
So we were just saying in here that we apologies to the hardened radio fans here that we've really kind of given you a very quick potted history of everything. So it's but it's a flavor of how it's all come to being. And of course now we're on land. We're still we're now a non-profit station, and if we could thank, there's a couple of people. The mast you see on the ship now was given to us by a company called Radio Structures, which was very kind of them, and a guy called Dave Lockyer got the old masts craned off, and that was great. And now our processing for our streams and our AM have been donated by Broadcast Warehouse, so I do feel I should say a big thanks to them.
Well, good.
One last one. to Jay Tyler at Wheatstone, who's given us some cables and connectors for an R60 audio arts desk we have downstairs that will be a backup for here. So Jay has given us a big helping hand in getting that going. And what was nice is that Jay said, you know, we appreciate the history of Caroline and the importance of it. And that's just nice that that's recognized. And, you know, we get a lot of people who realize that it's just a little bit special. It's not your run-of-the-mill radio station.
I'm going to guess, you know, for a lot of radio stations, taking phone calls, taking requests, it has been part of their programming. I'm going to guess that was pretty difficult to do back in the day on Radio Caroline, right?
Yeah, they used to get a lot of mail, but obviously way delayed. You know, you could it'd be weeks delayed, I guess, at times.
Yeah, sometimes months.
But you got a lot of mail still, nevertheless. Yeah. And I mean, you know, back in the 60s, they just got sackfuls of the stuff. So, yeah, it's been an interesting thing, and I think it's Caroline certainly in the 70s as an album station, and now really it's not heavy on talk. It's just kind of quite we kind of like to talk to you rather than at you, and just play some quality album. It's an alternative to the top 40, you know, the big organization stations that are out there today, and it would just a little more personal, and the music is a little you might not know everything, but hopefully you like it, you know, so that's the vibe.
Gotcha. All right. Hey, I'm checking in with our producer to see if we can show any of the pictures. Now, I put together about 20 pictures or so from mostly from the past. Oh, here we go. Let's see if we can zoom in on any on the first picture here. I know Suncast is let's just try to guess the year and what's going on as we move through these pictures. What
That's
do you think this is, gentlemen?
He's at it, Robbie Dale, I think. It's very small on my screen. Hang on 2 seconds.
Yeah,
it's Robbie Dale, who was one of a very well-known DJ at the time. And famously, when Radio Caroline was outlawed, he, along with another guy called Johnny Walker, they broadcast past midnight on the day that it was outlawed. And because they literally didn't know what was going to happen the next day. They didn't know if the military was going to turn up. They didn't. They carried on till they ran out of money, basically. Yeah. But, famous broadcast, Robbie Dale going and Johnny Walker with a bit of music, We Shall Overcome and all this sort of stuff. So that's Robbie Dale.
Okay. Let's move on. By the way, that last image, that first image we looked at there was courtesy of Getty Images, and I'm sorry I didn't ask their permission. I didn't notice that it had their mark on it. Okay, who's this?
So that's Tom Lodge, again, a DJ from the 60s. He was actually the program controller in 65, 66, I think, and actually brought the station, because there was another massive station called Radio London that was suddenly arrived with Pam's jingles and whatever, and was hugely popular. And Tom got the listenership back, fought back and got the listenership. That is taken in, when was the RSL in the Docklands, 97? So the ship was tied up in London Docklands, and we did an RSL, which is a restricted service license broadcast, where you apply for a 28-day license from Ofcom, which is our equivalent of the FCC. Tom actually came back to the station and was part of that broadcast, and that pitch is taken then.
Yeah. All right, let's look at let's go next. We got a bunch to get through, so we'll just move
through
them here.
It's like a quiz, this, isn't it?
Yeah.
Oh, who's this? That is Caroline's probably most famous DJ, yeah. Tony Blackburn, who went from when Caroline became illegal, a lot of them kind of jumped ship a little bit earlier and were taken up by BBC, put on a replacement pop service called Radio One, and Tony was the first voice on Radio One, and he's still around in broadcasting today. Forced to be reckoned with. He's in his 70s, but he sounds fabulous.
I love that you could see out the window and see the sea outside the window there. All right, who's this?
And that is Johnny Walker.
It is.
I think. Oh, so Johnny was the guy with Robbie Dale mentioned earlier. He's still on BBC Radio 2 to this day.
And still a huge supporter of Caroline, as is Tony Blackburn, which is great. So many of the guys that were involved in the early days are still massively supportive of what we do, which is wonderful.
And Johnny Walker, he was a bit of a hero of mine as a broadcaster. Yeah, I think he's great. He's got a lovely voice, nice manner, quite funny, quite lighthearted.
And although he never worked on this ship at sea, obviously, he's since been back and he's actually broadcast from this ship, from this very studio. So that's wonderful.
Next question, please. That's a technician. Now, that's the Continental Electronics that was on the Mi Amigo. That's a technician that whose name I don't know, but that's the 50 kilowatt Continental.
I will say that oscilloscope in the middle of that Continental is important for keeping it tuned. All right, what's this ship?
So when Caroline first arrived in 64, that was the ship. Mm-hmm. That was a Danish passenger ferry called the Fredericia. That's the ship that I mentioned to you went round to become Caroline North off the Isle of Man.
Okay.
And the Mi Amigo was the one that stayed south. So that's the ship we're on. We're up in that just above the word Caroline, where there's a little window. Okay. One of the two studios on that level. So that's where we are. Just further back, if you pan to the left of that, that's where we are. So the three windows at the front of that are the record library. Ooh,
that's the boat that rocked. So yeah, the boat that rocked. Or I believe it was Pirate Radio. It was renamed in the US and Canada as Pirate Radio. Okay. But the boat that rocked, which is very, how to describe it, very loosely, shall we say, loosely based on Radio Caroline.
Because I was going to ask you how accurate that was, yeah.
Well, the thing is, Kirk, if it was accurate, you'd have had a load of guys sitting around smoking cigarettes and drinking coffee and answering letters, which wouldn't have made a very good film. And so it's a fun story, but the opening section of that film that tells you what was on the radio initially, which was the BBC, I've forgotten the program, but it was, you know, very pompous, blah, 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 blah. And then suddenly, bang, there's these guys shouting and not reading. Every link on the BBC was scripted, and no one had ever heard radio where the guys just sat and spoke and said what they thought and played pop records. I mean, it was, I can't quite emphasize the revelation that this music explosion brought to by the pirates was in the country.
Don't forget to add that the film used all our equipment.
Dave Foster makes a very good point that a lot of the equipment on the set came off this ship, and in fact our Duolux was resprayed because obviously it had to look brand new because it would have been.
All right, what are we looking at here?
That is this ship mast.
Yeah.
So, I mean, just a stunning sight. It doesn't look real, does it? But I can assure you it is. So a lot of people say it's a 300-foot mast. It's actually about 270 feet. It was a folded unipole for the radio-y people here. So there's right in the center of it is a big kind of 2.5 foot high insulator, through deck insulator. So the feed came up through the deck, split, and there were two vertical wires that joined the mast at a tuned point up at the top. You can't quite see it in that picture, actually. The bottom of the mast wasn't insulated; it was grounded.
Wow. All right. Next, I think we have a console. Yeah.
Not ours.
Yeah, that's not ours.
Oh, not yours.
That's
okay.
That's Gateway. Right, so that's a Gateway, and ours is a Duolux, which is the sort of similar board, I think, but with two VUs.
All right. Now here's the combining system for two stations.
Yes, I'm guessing 585 modern. I'm guessing that's a modern copy of the diagram that Peter Chicago scrawled on the side of the wall in the transmitter room. Mm.
Okay. All right.
Oh, yeah, there you can see the frequencies there were 576 and 963. Right, that's our studio in Strood. And so that's a bigger version of this Alice Air 2000 that we've got in here. Beautiful desk. It was really most commercial radio stations had those in the 90s.
Yeah.
And we're just getting a couple of issues now with a input A-B selection sometimes gets a bit iffy, but otherwise, and they're beautiful to use. So they've got a channel on off at the bottom. So in this studio, we've got remote starts on the four players on our playout system. That's us. That's us.
Oh, hello. Hi.
Yeah. We have more pictures. What's this?
Oh, crumbs. It's like so small. It's so small on our screen. I'm afraid I can't. Can't make it out.
Well, it almost looks like a reunion tour of a bunch of folks who are a little over average age.
Yeah, there's a lot of those around here.
What are you saying?
There you go. Oh, that's what I saw.
Oh, there's the sticker. Yeah. So yeah, that was the sticker.
And that is the Mi Amigo, the ship on the above the line of Caroline. That's the Mi Amigo. That's people have a. It's funny. Everyone that worked on that ship seems to have a massive affinity and affection for it. Mm. It was only about 180 feet long. It was in a bit of a state. You know, it's amazing it didn't sink before it did. And it sunk without loss of life. We had a convention we held last year, which was 50 years of marking the Marine Offences Act that shut them down effectively, or tried to. And I've lost my thread. What were we just looking at? Lost my thread. I can't remember what I was saying now.
It's
so
illegal to listen.
It's illegal to listen to Radio Caroline. So I'm trying to think what I was going to say now. I've lost my thread. Move on. Next picture, please.
He's sober.
Yes. I only had one beer with my curry. again, very small on our screen. Sorry, can't quite make out the people, but I would say that was in the 80s sometime.
Yeah, I mean, we joke about this, but it's very true. I mean, how many photographs have been taken of this ship and our other ships over the years? I mean, thousands of them.
Here we go. Tony Blackburn on the left, Tom Lodge. Oh, now, right in the middle, the silver-haired gentleman is Ronan O'Reilly, who founded the station. Still with us today, but not very well, sadly. But he's an amazing guy, makes things happen. Quite a remarkable guy, charisma coming out of his ears. To his right, Johnny Walker, then Mike Ahern. Yep. And I'm afraid I don't know the name of the guy on the right. Do you?
No, I don't think it is.
No. So that looks like a reunion, I would say, in the 90s.
London Docklands.
Yes, yes. So the ship is at London Docklands. For that, that would be 97.
Yeah. Okay. Just another beautiful picture of the ship.
Now, that's the ship as it is now.
As she is now, and that's where she is now. Yeah. So that's the location where we still are. That's where we're talking to you from. So that's the Blackwater Estuary. That would have been taken, probably just after she arrived back here. So she's been in this location now for just over 4 years.
Something like that.
Yeah, just over 4 years she's been in this location. She's been here before during the mid-1990s. And it's a nice place to be out on this estuary. It's just like it used to be in the old days in many respects, in that, as I said earlier, you're getting on a boat to come here rather than driving right up to the ship, parking your car and walking up a gangplank. So this is...
And the North Sea is so close. I took a picture once and looked at it on my phone and it said the North Sea
as a location.
Wow. Hey, guys, tell you what, we're gonna hear one more sponsor message. We're going to come back with a few final notes and fond memories and maybe a look ahead at what's ahead for Railline for those who love it, who listen to it, and who still produce all the programming. We're going to hear from our friends at Lavo and be right back.
There has probably never been a better time in history to buy a new radio mixing console. Today's consoles are more sophisticated than ever, with more features and functions than you can shake a stick at, but have you noticed how complicated they are? There's a sea of knobs and switches and displays and buttons. Some of them look like you might need a pilot's license to do your show. Well, a board doesn't have to be complicated to be powerful. Just look at the new Ruby mixing surface from Lavo. The first thing you notice is how smooth and streamlined it is. Ruby has lots of cool tech, but what it doesn't have is that confusing ocean of buttons that clutter things up. Now, we all know that there are some console features the Jock only uses once in a while, so why dedicate controls to them? Ruby fixes this problem by moving those once-in-a-blue-moon controls to a touch-sensitive, customizable GUI that happily shares screen space with your other studio software, helping you fight control room clutter. Thanks to this design innovation, talent that use Ruby produce smoother shows with less errors. Controls that are used the most fall naturally to hand, while functions that rarely need adjustment are easily controlled with just a couple of clicks in the context-sensitive GUI. And Ruby has cool features you won't find on other boards, like Auto Mix, an intelligent gain writing function that guarantees the perfect mix for multi-mic morning shows and call-in segments. Dual-mode snapshots that instantly switch the motorized faders between on-air and production modes, and enough DSP and I/O options to make even your pro sound pals green with envy. And because quality is as important to Lavo as it is to you, every console is proudly built to fanatically precise standards at Lavo's own factory in Germany. If you're ready to declutter your control room, do yourself a favor. Check out the new Ruby and the other cool Lavo radio tech at www.lawo.com/twert.
I want to thank Lavo for sponsoring this week in Radio Tech. And hey, if this technology looks good to you, go check them out at Lavo, LAWO.com. And if you put the slash twert on there, that does two things. First of all, it takes you right to the radio products page because, you know, they do a lot of other products too. So, and then it'll also let them know that we sent you and that you're a listener or viewer of This Week in Radio Tech. All right. It's show number 413. Kirk Harnack along here. Chris Tobin couldn't be with us. He's running security apparently for the SBE meeting over at the One World Trade Center tonight in New York City. And our guests, Rob Ashard and Nick Jackson, are with us. They are live from a boat. So welcome back, guys.
We're rocking around the ocean with a bit of a 40-mile-an-hour wind buffering us.
I don't know if you can hear the wind blowing through the slightly open porthole here, Kirk, but it really is really blowing quite something outside, about 50-mile-an-hour gusts at the moment. So the ship is moving around quite a bit. So we are getting that sensation we used to get being out at sea and rolling around. So, yeah, quite a storm we've got blowing through. So it was a good night to do this and to talk to you from out here.
And, Kirk, if I could just mention, one of the thanks I missed out really was Manx Radio, which are taking our broadcast live from the ship this weekend. So it's just been a really great association, and we'd like to thank them very much for that. And we've just been confirmed to be carried next year as well, which is great. So the reason we have that tie-up, as I mentioned, is that that ship went round and became Caroline North, and so Caroline has always had a nice link with the Isle of Man. So, John, I'm just going to play you a jingle. This is one of the jingles that you can hear this weekend.
Great music and memories. Radio Caroline North.
There we go. And here's, we've just got a few lined up here.
This is Caroline. Yeah.
This is an old one from the 70s.
Caroline.
Brings a tear to some of our eyes.
Radio Caroline music.
There you go.
Love it. The old Sonovox. So, and that first jingle you played was from Pam's, that super high lady's voice. She was so popular on so many jingle packages. Amazing.
Right. Yeah. I mean, they're just amazingly recorded, aren't they, the Pams? So somehow I've always wondered how they achieved that. I think they kind of compressed the voices individually, and they kind of sit like a musical chord. And I noticed that some of the time on their jingles, they don't have vibrato in their voices. They keep their voices straight, and it gives you this solid note, which is amazing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's a whole science to that, and that certainly the PAMS people got it, the JAMS people get it, TM gets it. There's plenty of people who get that well. But, yeah, that high voice, she was – you know, I want to say she was even on the – remember the original Star Trek episode? She was on – she did the real high singing on that. I think it's the same lady.
Wow.
That was it. I could do it.
Yeah.
No, you can't. Please don't cry.
I just did. Too late.
Nick, is there anything you'd like to share with us, a final memory or thought, or where Radio Caroline is now, and encourage folks to listen in and remember the good old days?
Yeah. As I said earlier, it's just wonderful that we're still here doing this. Having been lucky enough to be out here years and years ago, if you'd have said to us, and we joke about this a lot, if you'd have said to us in 1989, hey, 2018, you'll still be on the ship and you'll still be broadcasting and Caroline will still be around, I think we'd have said, no, come on, be serious. For many of us, coming back, it's a way of giving something back. You know, Caroline, for me and many of my colleagues, it was our first station, so it's nice for those of us that were involved and started here to come back and be part of it. It is a big family, really. And as Rob mentioned earlier, there's so much history to Caroline. We've just scratched the surface and given you a potted history. I mean, there's very few radio stations in the world, isn't there, that are over 50 years old. You know, they've either changed name, they're whatever, but to still be here after all this time is amazing. So there's an awful lot of history. And again, we encourage people to go to the website to find out more. So that's radiocaroline.co.uk.
And also,
what is that microphone? While the camera's still on Nick, what's the microphone that you've got there, Nick?
That's an AKG 202.
D202.
D202 in AKG.
So it's actually, it's a dynamic mic, but it has two capsules, a low and a high capsule. Almost like a speaker has a tweeter and a woofer that has two dynamic capsules. And it's a very highly used mic in Europe. And certainly in the 70s, both Radio 1 and Radio 2 at the BBC and most of the ILR stations, independent local radio stations, had 202s.
Still used in Houses of Parliament.
222 on the Houses of Parliament, yeah, which is a slightly neater version of that. Sorry, I'm a bit of a microphone anorak, aren't I? A bit nerdy, apologies for that.
And what's your mic, Rob?
It's just a Behringer B1 or
something. It's a B1.
And I think it always sounds very nice to me. Don't forget, it's going through, there's a TV Optimod down there that's just kind of smoothing stuff out a bit. But there's a bit of EQ in the mixer. Oh, actually, yeah, a fair bit of top and mid. Something I noticed when I was visiting stations in America, a lot of them didn't seem to have EQ in the mixers, in the mics. But we've always had that available to us. I know sometimes you might have had it tucked away in a rack somewhere, but no, there's a beautiful desk that you can get a version of the channels without the EQ. But yeah, we've got the EQ option. So yeah, it just brightens it up a bit. It's just nice to add a bit of mid and top, basically.
I think most of us don't trust the talent to fiddle with their own EQ, because you'd come after every guy's shift, the high end would be tweaked up and the low end would be tweaked up, and it would just be like that all the time. A certain amount of that is what you want, but not too much.
Yeah. Well, yeah, the thing I've often thought is that people often make those adjustments and forgetting what the processing's doing after it. And that's why it ends up a little bit. I think you've commented on it before, kind of with that sizzling top on the presenter's microphones. Yeah. It's sometimes quite unpleasant. You don't really need too much processing on a mic if you've got a processor after it.
Especially a multi-band processor with a little man in there on every band, you know, doing his darndest. And, you know, we know that with EQ, a little bit goes a long way. It really does.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Wow.
But as Nick said, it'd be great if everyone could have a look at our website, www.radiocaroline.co.uk. There's all sorts of stuff, history there, pictures of the studio and the presenters and whatever. We've also got a nice section called Returnees, where people have rediscovered Caroline, having listened to it in the 60s or the 70s. And then I tell you what, when that Boat That Rocked, or what was it called over
Pirate
there?
Radio.
Pirate Radio came out, we had a massive amount of people go, oh, I remember, and lots of people googled it and went, oh my god, it's still in the air. And then we, you know, that actually did us a lot of good.
Well, another link, Caroline Flashback.
Oh yes, sorry, we have other streams as well. We've got a Caroline Flashback stream on that page. So, and as you said, we've got the app, so you can there's a Caroline Flashback app and the app that you showed, and they work really well. There's all sorts of different data rates. I use the 48k in the car, Bluetooth to the car. It sounds fantastic.
One more plug.
I'll
we
bet
do
it
boat
does.
Trips as well. We do guided tours of the ship as well. So anybody that wants to come and see the ship for themselves can now come out and have a full tour. And we talk about the history briefly. It was a record-breaking fishing trawler before becoming Radio Caroline. And then obviously we get into the studios and we can show off the transmitter room. And the one of my favorite rooms in the ship to this day is still the vast vinyl record library, which is wonderful. It's all on the website, and we do tours of the ship, and they're pretty much sold out the moment we advertise new dates.
So. And you were saying earlier, Nick, when we were talking before the show, that quite a lot of the time people come here and who aren't particularly interested because they've come along with someone else.
Yeah.
And then they've said, oh, wow, this is actually...
Yeah, we get those that have listened to Caroline for years that come out and bring... Maybe they'll bring their long-suffering partners who didn't really want to come, truth be told. You know, they think, oh, no, I'll come along because you're going. And then at the end of the tour, they will say to us, do you know, it's my husband's hobby or whatever, I came along... I didn't want to. I didn't expect to like it. But I loved it. And can I come back? When can I come back? And that's great to see. That's great to see. But if anybody wants to come out, again, all the details are on the website, Kirk.
That sounds like what my wife's reaction would be. She's long-suffering, and then she might like it. I would love it. I would absolutely love it.
They all are.
Okay, so my final question, this is a weird one, but
So the record library that's there, and I, I'm assuming those, a lot of those records were moved from previous ships, perhaps onto this ship. The, some of them
you're
are probably
ask
old.
Us how many records are in the library, aren't you?
Well, actually, no. That would be too easy.
No, they weren't because they sunk with the ship.
Yeah, oh,
they sunk.
With the ship. Oh, okay. Well,
yeah, they started from scratch with this ship.
My best memories, I wouldn't say my best, my memories of record libraries, when I started in radio in the late 70s, early 80s, my recollection was the library smelled like coffee and cigarettes. And I'm not saying I like that smell, but oh my goodness, the cardboard shucks, the record covers just absorb that smell of coffee and cigarettes. Is it like that there?
Do you smell that again? It bangs you right back there, I bet.
Yeah, it does. It does. Oh, wow. Gentlemen, thank you so much. I'm sorry, Nick. Go ahead.
Yeah, coffee, cigarettes, and beer, I think, is the odor you pick up in the Caroline Record Library.
There you go. There you go. All right. Gentlemen, I wish we had more time. It's been a great hour, and thank you for suffering through thank you for working hard to get the technical problem solved, to get going on the show. Really terrific that you plan B worked out, so I'm glad that it did.
Yeah.
And we'll put in the show notes, we'll put the links that you talked about and some links to some pictures and maybe even a link to the movie if people want to see an inaccurate version of a dramatized version.
Hopefully we can put a link from our website to this, your webcast on Twitter. Is that okay?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. And we'll have a permanent link for it within about 48 hours or so.
Lovely. Right. So hopefully some of the people that have missed it, we'll put it on the website, and you should get some more viewers.
Rob, you have suggested this show a long time ago, and you've gone to a lot of trouble to make it happen, and I dearly appreciate the amount of trouble that you've gone to. We've both learned some things about the technicalities, and I know that you've really been through a lot, so thank you for making this happen live from the Ross event.
My pleasure. And just to say, I've enjoyed your webcast for I don't know how long, since you were back in Leo's place, and I've been a long-time viewer of this show.
Oh, I want to make sure we say hi to your cameraman. What was his name?
Dave Foster.
Okay. I know a Dave Foster, a different Dave Foster.
Thank you, Dave.
Thanks, Dave. So thanks, Dave. Thanks, Nick. And thank Rob. Cheers, everybody. We got to go. Thanks to our sponsors, which have been the Telos Alliance and the Telos VX new products, the VX Enterprise and the VX Prime Plus. Check them out. You're going to save a ton of money on putting phone callers on the air and for TV stations doing IFB intercom. Also, thanks to VoxPro from Broadcaster General Store. And also thanks to Lavo at lavo.com/twort. Suncast has been our producer, working extra hard today. Thank you, Suncast. And thanks to Andrew Zarian, the founder of the GFQ Network. We'll see you next week on This Week in Radio Tech. Bye-bye.